He woke gradually, very cool and comfortable, except for a little smacking of sand at the corner of his jaw. He raised his head and spat it out, and startled. He was overbalancing, and his hind quarters went tipping away underneath him, as though he were on the deck of a ship, plunging unexpectedly down into a trough.
"What has happened to the ground?"
he said, and tried to stand, and could not. There was nothing solid for his feet to grasp, and his limbs dragged very strangely if he moved them. Everything seemed very low.
"Lawrence,"
he said. The moon had set and the sun was not yet risen, and he could not make out much of anything but the small glow of the fire's embers down within the camp, and the rearing outcrop of rock some distance away.
"Yes, my dear,"
Lawrence said drowsily from his back, and then looking over raised his voice and called strongly,
"Mr. Folding, a light there, if you please."
The aviators came with torches and then abruptly stopped, scrambling back with exclamations, their boots sinking in the sand, thick, sludgy noises like the bubbles of a porridge slowly boiling as they pulled them free. In the light, Temeraire saw he had sunk into the earth, nearly up to his breastbone. The folded edges of his wings were plunged deep, and his tail was half submerged, his legs wholly so.
"But I was only sleeping," he protested, and tried to rear out, but he could not pull his forelegs free, though he exerted all his strength.
One would come a little way out, rising, wet sand dribbling from his hide as he pulled, but the effort required grew and grew until he could not continue, and sank forward again. He planted, and found this raised him perhaps half a foot, not unlike bobbing in the water, but he could not get out, he could not move. He tried again, more vigorously thrashing his limbs. He might move them a little, side to side, he found, if he did not try to pull free, until Lawrence sharply said,
"Temeraire, stop! You are sinking further!"
The sand had crept up higher on his chest and was lapping at the edges of his back.
"Lawrence, perhaps you had better climb off,"
Temeraire said, turning his neck around to inspect Lawrence's position with some concern.
"I am sure I can reach to the others if I stretch my neck."
"No, I thank you," Lawrence said.
"I would advise against moving, or lowering your neck to where it may be entrapped,"
Tharke said. He was crouched down inspecting the pit, and setting broken-off twigs into the sand to mark its border.
"I am surprised the quicksand should go deep enough for you to have sunk this far."
"We cannot have overlooked this last night," Lawrence said. "Temeraire and I were sitting here an hour before we slept. The earth was perfectly solid."
"I only do not understand why it will not let me out,"
Temeraire said, unable to resist trying again to draw his foreleg free, very slowly and carefully, only a little way at a time, but it dragged and dragged and dragged, and at last halted. He could draw it no further, and it sank gradually back away as soon as he stopped his efforts. He was not uncomfortable, precisely. It was quite pleasantly cool, and when Lawrence asked, Temeraire said stoutly,
"Oh, I do not mind it of itself, only I would like to get out of it now."
But that did not address the clinging, sticky quality of the stuff. Sand was squirming everywhere under the edges of his hide, and there was something dreadful in not being able to get out. It was not at all like swimming in water, which did not try and drag you back down, like chains which you were not allowed to take off.
"Well, I don't see why you didn't get out of it when you first noticed," Caesar said, having roused up and yawning tremendously against the early morning.
He was not yet done with the hatchling's usual tendency to sleep endlessly.
"I was asleep," Temeraire bit out, annoyed, "and so I did not notice until I had woken, and I do not think it is at all wonderful I should not have, as no one would expect perfectly ordinary sand to turn into something like this. How are we to turn it back?"
"The sun's heat may burn off enough of the moisture to allow you to dig free when it rises," Tharke said after a moment. "Perhaps some underground spring feeds this place."
"If we can remove some quantity of the sand, you may be able to free yourself more quickly," Lawrence said. "Mr. Forthing, shovels, if you please."
"What's over there, then?"
one of the convicts said, pointing, and Temeraire looked. On the ridge of the dune, rising above his precarious position, a narrow, angular head was up and visible as a black silhouette against the lightening sky, watching. Another rose up beside it, and then another, until there was a line of them, long muzzles with rounded snouts and small black eyes which caught the reflections of the torches and gleamed yellow back at them. They had queer, tufted heads.
"Stay there,"
Forthing said. The aviators had out their pistols. The light was increasing. The bunyips were shades of red and brown, the very colour of the earth with pebbled hides, and the tufts were yellow as the grass. If they were not poking up from the hill, they would have been very difficult to see at all.
"Oh,"
Temeraire said, indignant. "I see now how it is. They are even more cowardly than I thought. This must certainly be their doing. They did not care to fight me properly or defend their territory, but instead they have made this wretched, sneaking trap."
Rankin snorted.
"How a gaggle of lizards are to have produced anything of the sort, I should care to know," he said. "More likely they have come like vultures to wait."